Morning, New York City. I want to thank our hosts for giving me this opportunity and all of you for listening. I have a short, hopefully entertaining and illuminative presentation focused on what we see out there in terms of the state of the threat. So I hear there's an ancient Chinese saying, I'm told, that may you live in interesting times. And I guess the lively debate these days is whether or not that's a curse or a blessing. But certainly we live in interesting times, not only in terms of the current economic conditions, what's going on in the world at large, but specifically around what we see in technology, business enablement, and the security that gets wrapped around that. So to segue from the Chinese to Wayne Gretzky, skate where the puck is going is something I think that we all try and do in terms of anticipating, you know, what we are going to see in the near future. And I hope for all of you that you have this opportunity to use these times to improve your profile, improve your business, and be able to do so efficiently and securely. So let's look back for a few minutes, driveway looking in the rearview mirror, and remember the good old days that sort of was the beginning of the monetizing of hacking, security, breaches, etc. And it kind of started with, kids, teenagers, boys who couldn't get dates. And so what they did is they were able to make themselves known through, exploits, viruses, and improve their self-esteem. Well, these young men grew up, and they got mortgages, families, and so on and so forth. And we saw, and I think everyone here is aware of this, is the monetizing of those activities. Both solo, as our esteemed prior speaker talked about, and in an organized fashion. And so where are we today? We're at a conjunction of technology and this monetizing of economic crime. And the latest, of course, is this concept, until somebody comes up with a better name of it, of Web 2.0. So what can we say about Web 2.0? Well, let me take a step back and just talk about what we call the webscape. And the webscape, to WebSense, has a long tail, a hundred million or so websites. Some of those exist only momentarily as places that when you click on a link in an email or drive by a website, end up taking you to a site to steal your information. Some of them are sites that are legitimate, data storage sites, personal photo sites, etc., and some of them are illegitimate. The known web, the static web, the web that perhaps might be thought of as Web 1.0, is, airline sites, travel sites, sports sites, relatively static content. Knowing about the URL or the page is good enough. But the dynamic web, where we spend most of our time these days, is really, in a sense, a mashup. And when we go to Google and run a search, that changes each time we do that. And why the reputation of Google or any other search site might be without question, the content that's delivered through that is dynamic and presents a series of challenges that we believe WebSense helps address. So let's talk about that. And let's pick on Google this morning. So the Google 1.0 that I use, Google.com, is static in the sense that it's an HTML content. It's a relatively small size, no scripts, few files, and one reputationally confirmable source in Google. Now, my son or daughter might go to iGoogle And iGoogle is also Google, but it has a completely different makeup. You have dynamic HTML, Flash, JavaScripts. The size is much larger, and most of that size increase is associated with JavaScripts. And perhaps most importantly, that one site could have up to 1,000 sources. All of those who are, you know, reputational veracity cannot be easily determined. So how do you secure that? Well, if you look at the technologies and remember the Wayne Gretzky analogy the backstop technologies that we all use and that WebSense helped create in terms of a categorized database of websites, the AV companies with their signature-based defenses and reputational services, they are effective against looking at a static web page. But you go to a Web2L or mashup website, and these technologies don't work. They're ineffective against scripts, and as I've mentioned numerous times, reputation at a website level is not going to do the trick for you. And so what happens when you have that vector of Web2L combined with the fact that this presents a very interesting way to attack your organization? Well, you run in, and I think, again, to remember the previous presentation, the external attacks are oftentimes coming through the web. So 39% of malicious web attacks include data stealing code. That's what the purpose is. And a vast majority of these days are happening over the web, and that is a trend that is increasing. And, of course, what are they going after? They're going after any assets, any digital assets that have value and can be monetized. So on the other side of that, you have the tension between the fact that the reason that companies, organizations are using the web, or even Web 2.0, is to get their job done. And so you have to balance business enablement with security. So here's a quick little example of one of our anonymized customers here in New York City and how we help them with the issue or ability to be able to go out, use chat boards, but to control the posting of content. So let's go and jump back out again and take a more global view of what we see out there. So when we survey, what we see is that there's tremendous pressure on the managers that are responsible for access in their organization to allow access to Web 2.0 applications. How many folks out here allow access to Facebook? Okay, nobody will admit it. How many block? Okay, good. I am. Okay. How about other, sort of Web 2.0 applications, be they LinkedIn or, others? Are you finding that there's pressure on this? Is the survey valid or not, I guess is the question. And then I think the other question is even though you may not block that or allow that in your policy, how many people in your organization are finding ways around that? So this is just sort of a repeat of what we talked about. The point I want to make here is that users feel that despite those policies, they're just going to go out and try and do their job. And if in trying to do their job, they have to bypass your security policies, by gosh, they're going to do that for the betterment of your organization, they think. So marketing seems to be, we got some of our marketing people in the room, they put together these slides. They always think that guerrilla marketing, using Web 2.0 is a great way to get the message out there. So there's pressure to use these technologies. My organization, salespeople, be it Jigsaw or other applications, want to be out there on the web. But again, there's that tension between allowing your organization to do the things that people think they need to do to be efficient and effective and getting your message out, and doing that securely, compounded with or layered on top of that this new and changing dynamic of Web 2.0. So it's here. Enterprise 2.0 is here. Web 2.0 is here, and Employee 2.0 is here. Employees feel that as long as you're going to require them to work in an environment that blurs the line between personal and business, that they ought to be able to do a little shopping, maybe a little online gambling, but continue to go out and live their life from a Starbucks, from their home office, as well as when they're plugged in and networked in and hardwired into your company building. So I mentioned this before, and this is a little repetitious, but we can't drive by looking in the rearview mirror. And even when we look at what we've done in terms of technology development, we see the obsolescence of our original technology and the requirement to keep up and actually get ahead of what is happening in terms of the technology and the way that it's being exploited by criminals. And everyone can read the examples at the bottom. So what are the best or better practices for securing Web 2.0? One of the things that we see is critically important is this concept of an integrated policy to manage data. So from a centralized policy management paradigm, you have to be able to know and identify your information. You have to be able to monitor it across all channels, web, down to the removable media. And then you have to be able to enforce policy and your company policy in context, in a granular fashion, with sensitivity to the business rules that require that are required to run your company efficiently. You need visibility and control. And for those that are in the incident management or incident response portion of your organization, that sounds, when you do a slideshow, to be a fairly easy concept. But if you have maybe 1,000 of these types of alerts in any given day in a large organization, it begins to lose its helpfulness in terms of resolving these types of things. So, for example, how many people might see a security alert that looks something like this, kicked out of your system? You guys are very, very good about not revealing things, so I appreciate that. Very secure. My issue with this, and let me just, is that it lacks the information to be helpful when you're busy. So having an IP address, but then not being able to resolve it to the Active Directory, know who that employee is, know who their manager is, know what their role is, puts a burden on you in terms of your time. Same thing on the destination. So where is that information going? If it's an IP address, you can ultimately resolve it to that site, but it would be much more helpful to know that it that alert comes up and lets you know that it's a personal webmail site in this case. So looking at security alert B versus security alert A, I can make some pretty quick deductions. This is a marketing person that's taking PCI and personally identifiable information and probably sending it to their home website for reasons that we're not sure of. We can speculate. Maybe it's simply to work on the weekend, but it may violate company policy. So having that visibility and then being able to control behavior and the transaction flows of your data based upon that visibility is critically important. So let me take a step back and give you another anonymized example of a financial institution that implemented our DLP, data loss protection technology, recently, and kind of an atypical example of what you might see out there. So very quickly, over a period of weeks, they discovered a lot of policy violations. Most of them were by email, that is the most common channel, and web. and a few were by FPP, and that is probably due to the nature of their business. And then, as I mentioned earlier, you saw a lot of personal web transactions, people just trying to not only do their job but live their lives. In that passive monitoring mode, based upon some seasonality, not much was changing. When they sent out a company-wide notification that says, hi, you're on the company network, you're using company assets, and by the way, we may be monitoring you and looking to and reminding them of the company's security policy, everybody kind of stepped to attention, and the number of policy violations roughly dropped in half. Another month went by, and then they went to active enforcement. Whatever it was, encryption, blocking, quarantining, notification, you name it. And they went way, way down. And to the point where at this point in time, they managed that noise level. You see a slight upticking. That was seasonality resulting in hiring outside contractors who came in and started sending source code to their Google storage accounts. So that they could work more efficiently and effectively in violation of company policy. So real-time content and security scanning, that's kind of a mouthful, so let me kind of tell you, certainly in the context of what we do, what that might look like. So we started out and talked about a mashup as an example, and here's a relatively simplistic representation of an iGoogle page. You've got some gaming stuff going on. If you look carefully, you'll see some proxy avoidance and some IAM as well as some other functions. Well, rather than block that entire page, what you can do with real-time classification and scanning is simply block those feeds, those streams, those RSS streams, whatever it may be, that represent security risks or policy violations in terms of productivity or anything else. And here's an example of that same page with a policy, a security policy enforced in real time. So what exactly do we mean by real-time classification and scanning? We mean exactly that, inline real-time classification of all content inbound and to a great extent outbound as well. To protect you against dynamic, almost near instantaneous threats, scripts, web objects, browser-based applications, and it's at the content level. And what you ultimately end up with is the ability to balance that tension between using these tools, Enterprise 2.0, Web 2.0, but not, but being able to do so in a secure way, in a way that your policies are respected in your organization. So we call that a little bit of subjective policy setting, and I would call that more contextual policy setting. So when you understand things in context, you understand what that user, who that user is, it's not an IP address. You understand that destination, it's not an IP address, but you know that it's a website. You can make decisions efficiently around control. So, for example, somebody in HR sending patient information to a personal web storage via web is probably not allowable, and it's something that you might block. However, somebody in finance sending financial information to a business partner via email is something that you may allow, but you may want to encrypt it. And finally, in this somewhat simplistic example, a salesperson sending customer records wherever and taking it out by removable media, it may be something that you allow, but you ask them to confirm, is this exactly what they want to do? And you may notify their manager or something else. But you can enforce policies based upon that transaction flow, by who's using that data, how they're sending it, not only just understanding the data, but understanding the who, the where, and the how, in addition to the actual what of the data. So where does that lead all of you as CISOs and security professionals? Most of us have been as popular as, I don't know, the internal audit department. we're kind of Dr. No, right? No, you can't do that, or okay, you can do it, but just for a little while, or only on your lunch hour, or just your team, based upon you filling out this long form and disclaimer that you have a business purpose for this. And, you know, you're just never responsive enough, never granular enough to win any popularity contests. So the future holds hope, not only for protection, but for our popularity and the sense that we're supporting the organization in business enablement. And our hope is that someday the internet security policy of your organization looks something like this. Of course, upped a bit in terms of legalese words. But Acme Corporation understands the internet is part of your daily life. You may go to any site you want, but please do not be abusive, wasting hours a day. You will automatically be stopped from any activity which poses a security risk, degrades the civility of our workplace, or attempts to transfer proprietary information inappropriately. Yay. So, as you go through these interesting times, consider these things. Consider how you enable your business to be more effective, more efficient, but also more secure, and how you will integrate the security requirements of your organization with the needs of your organization to use these exciting new tools, not only to do business, but to improve the personal lives of your employees. And hopefully consider how we might be able to help you. So who is WebSense, just in case you don't know? Come by our booth, we'll tell you. We are a public company. We have our Best in Show awards and quite a large contingent of security researchers looking out into the webscape, into the threatscape, and hopefully developing useful technology. We have product in three areas: web security, data security, and messaging security. Data, as I've mentioned throughout this presentation, is sort of the level of granularity that you need to be effective, but obviously email and web are the largest vectors. So I want to thank you for your time, and we've got a few minutes to perhaps take some questions.